Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
All these companies are not going to be able to thrive in Europe because the policy environment is just not going to be there for them. And maybe Europe's okay with that. But the fact that we're all laughing about the CEO of the largest French company going to New York, it is surprising and funny given all we know about France. But it tells you something really serious about where the oil and gas industry is in Europe.
Welcome to the City of London.
The City of London.
The next station is Bank. Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
The financial heart of the country.
The City.
Welcome to In the City.
Stand clear of the doors, please.
Another week, another look at the conversations motivating policymakers. Motivating. Guys, we're motivating you. If you're a central bank, you better listen to us. Another week, another look at the conversations motivating policymakers and financiers the world over. Now, this week, we examine the takeover bid that has set the mining industry alight. We're talking BHP's offer for Anglo American, how the offer came together, what happens next, and really what it means for the FTSE. And we'll also talk about this trend of big oil and gas companies possibly looking to leave Europe and to look at a listing in the US. As we just heard from Will Kennedy, one of the guests on the podcast this week, it's ever more complex to be a big oil and gas company today. I'm Francine Lacroix, David Merritt back in New York City, Allegra Stratton likely recuperating from the debut of Voternomics, which I'm hoping everyone listened to. But here on In the City, we're taking a deep dive into business and market stories dominating the news cycle. We're talking, of course, about BHP's mission to partly break up and then acquire Anglo American. We have a stellar cast with me. We got them up early in the morning. Will Kennedy, Senior Executive Editor for Energy and Commodities, and our Senior Opinion Columnist, Javier Blas. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. You two understand the commodities complex and some of this underlying need or not for M&A more than anyone I know in London. So, Will, we woke up, it was only last week, and there was this like massive announcement, BHP offering $39 billion for its smaller rival. Did this come as a surprise?
Not to those people who are Bloomberg subscribers, because it wasn't a massive announcement. It was a massive scoop, I should say, for seeing my team working together with the deals team to break the biggest potential deal of the year. Was it a huge surprise? I think people have known that the BHP CEO, Mike Henry, had got himself in a place where he wanted to do a big deal. He saw a chance to do a big deal. Obviously, M&A in mining going back for the last 20 years has, let's say, a pretty patchy history. And we could perhaps talk a little bit about that. But he feels he's done some things. He's got rid of the oil and gas business. He tried a smaller acquisition, that he's ready to do this. What's driving it? What's driving his side to this deal? In one word, I think copper. Copper is very much seen as the commodity of the energy transition. It's seen as a commodity where demand is strong and supply is constrained. And although BHP has some very strong copper assets, it doesn't have a great growth story in copper. And he wanted to use these enormous revenues he's getting from the iron ore business and do something in copper. This is the play. So as you say, it's a complicated deal. He wants to persuade Anglo American that they should divest of some South African businesses he doesn't want, platinum, iron ore in South Africa, and he will buy the rest of the company, principally to get some very nice copper mines in the Andes, which would fit quite nicely with BHP's copper mines. And then they would said they would make strategic reviews of some other Anglo businesses like De Beers, the diamond business. So it's a complicated deal, but what's driving it is his desire to grow in copper.
Since that Bloomberg scoop, things have also gotten a bit more complicated. The activist investor Elliott is said to be building up a $1 billion stake in Anglo American. Javier, is this because Anglo American, actually what's important is that copper hit $10,000 a ton, which is a huge deal for Anglo. But was it a well-run business?
The main problem that Anglo American has is that it's not really a company, but a federation of companies under the same umbrella. You have the Anglo Platts, which is essentially a platinum business in South Africa, with his own listed entity. You have De Beers, which is a very distinctive company under Anglo American. You have a couple of iron ore operations, one in South Africa, again, quite distinctive one in Brazil. And then you have copper. So I see Anglo American as a bit of a confederation of different companies put together under this umbrella. And in that sense, if anything, the surprise to me is that it has lasted so long that those companies remain under the same umbrella. No one has really tried to separate it. And I think that then you go back to a very complex also shareholding structure where South African shareholders, particularly South African public money, has a quite strong percentage on the company and a voice on the board. And it has historically prevented for anything happening in Anglo American. The only reason that the company continues to be together is because some shareholders in South Africa wanted it that way, and commodity prices remain high, so everyone is making money and there are not too many complaints.
BHP has gone through already a big transformation, right? So Mike Henry, who's not the usual kind of loud, hard-charging mining executive, which I understand is more methodical, right? He takes over in 2020. And so he stops the dual listing. He actually sells off some of the oil and gas business and dismantles the dual listing. Well, this was already a chief executive that was preparing to change.
Yes, I think that's right. I think he is ambitious and clear-eyed about what he wants to do. And I think he understands how he needs to take the huge cash flow of iron ore today and transform that into a growth story for the coming years. I don't think he's going to do this deal at any cost. I think it is a very complicated deal to get done for the reasons that Javier says. I think that it will be hard to persuade South African interests that this deal works for them. Can they block the deal? I think you hear different views on that. But they have to convince Anglo that they want to go through this difficult divestment in South Africa. There are also going to be antitrust hurdles to this deal. There are a lot of interested parties, not least China, who will be by far the biggest company of biggest customer of this company, as it is of all mining companies. They buy half the world's copper. So in those terms, China has a huge interest in who's mining copper. So they will want their say. The Chileans may want their say. So there are lots of hurdles. This is not an easy task that Mike Henry set himself. And I think he is analytical. And I think that his task will not beget sort of summit fever, have his eyes on the prize at any cost, and be willing to walk away if people insist on too high a price or the difficulties of getting it done are too high. So I don't think we should see this as a certainty by any stretch of the imagination. But I think what has changed is all of a sudden the structure of the mining industry is up for grabs. And for all the reasons that Javier explained a moment ago, Anglo can't, even if it finds a way to remain independent, it can't remain independent with the structure it has today. It will have to find a way to realize more value for its shareholders. Because Mike Henry's gambit, what his analysis tells him, is the copper business is currently worth more than the whole market cap of Anglo.
So what does that mean, Javier? First of all, as soon as the proposal, we understand that Anglo actually swiftly rejected this proposal. Are they trying to get more money? Or are we going to see more actors coming in? And copper at 10,000, does it mean we just need to mine more copper?
The market is telling you that we need to provide an incentive for miners to mine more copper. Perhaps the most astonishing thing is that we are at $10,000 a ton for copper, and you don't see much development in the mining industry for copper. We are not seeing more exploration. Exploration remains very low. We are not seeing companies announcing big developments of mines. And it goes into what Will was saying. This is the commodity of the energy transition. You are going to electrify everything. The conductor of that electricity is going to be copper. It's just simple physics. It is. You could have a debate about what the chemistry of batteries is going to be, whether it's going to be lithium, whether it's going to be cobalt, whether it's going to be nickel. But for the transmission of electricity, there is very little debate. It just needs to be copper.
So this is basically electric vehicles. This is solar panels.
Everything.
And
I mean, it's mostly
cables.
The grid. It's just the grid. It's the conductor, the wire connecting everything, and that is copper, and it's going to require a lot of copper. It's not just the electric vehicles. Yes, of course, they use more copper than a combustion, the internal combustion engine vehicle, but it's completely a distraction. It's just the expansion of the grid is what is going to be the demand for copper. We are not seeing that kind of rush of the industry to build. So obviously the market is indicating, well, we need to find a price level where the industry develops more copper mines, but it's not going to be in easy locations because we have mined quite a lot of the easy copper and we're going to have to go into more difficult locations. And then you look at my Henry, the BHP CEO, effectively what he's also saying is, it's a lot cheaper for me to buy rather than to build. Until we see a change there where it's cheaper to build than to buy, we are going to see M&A because that's what is going to be the interest. Let's not forget that in some ways, while Mike Henry, I think he's making a very interesting play here, it was Glencore who started the trend when he have a go at tech in Canada. That didn't work. They wanted the whole thing, which was copper and coal. They ended only getting coal. So in some ways, I think that BHP is reacting to the first move of Glencore, knowing that others are thinking exactly the same thing. It's just try to get copper assets. And then it's a question of where you can get those copper assets that fit the kind of the operational profile of BHP. BHP doesn't like to have difficult countries. That's the reason that they don't want any assets in South Africa. So you're not going to see them bidding for companies that have assets in Zambia or the Democratic Republic of Congo or Panama or even Indonesia. And if you only want assets in the Americas, there are not that many companies that they are up for grabs and that you could buy at a reasonable price.
So is this a price problem? Are we going to see more bidders coming into this? Well, this could take months, or is it a regulator problem?
I think it could take a long time for this to pan out. I think ultimately Anglo shareholders will be the ones who need to decide whether they can make this deal work. Will others come in? I think other players are looking very interestedly at what's going on here. They're wondering if things might shake loose from this process. I think, as Javier said, Glencore has been thinking along the same lines. Rio Tinto will not want to fall too far behind BHP and will be thinking about what move it might need to make to stay in lockstep with its nearest rival. So I think all in all, it's a very interesting moment in the mining industry. Yeah.
To me, the key problem here is that we are not discussing is politics. Can you get this deal through South Africa? South Africa government and South Africa shareholders are going to have a big say here. And South Africa is heading to elections at the end of May. I don't see how you could get anything substantive agreed before South Africa has a new government. Because effectively, what BHP, we kind of put aside the niceties of the press release of South Africa, of BHP. What BHP said is, we want copper. We don't know what we are going to do with the beers, but most likely when a company says we're going to do a strategic review is we'll get rid of it. We're going to sell it to someone else. So basically
Javier, we understand that actually Anglo is already looking at potential options.
Yeah, and Anglo is looking also for potential options for that. And then they are saying, and of all the assets that the company has in South Africa, we want none. That's not a great message when you're going to have to negotiate with the South African government and the country's main pension fund, which happens to be the second largest shareholder on the company, for a solution. Can they block it? No. But can they make the life of BHP extremely difficult? Yes. You add to that that the country is heading to the most contested elections at the end of May since the end of apartheid. I think that the politics became very difficult.
Javier, we love on this podcast really talk about listings in the UK, whether things are looking better. And it was frankly a big blow when Mike Henry, the BHP chief executive, after I think 2 decades of BHP listed in London, decided to stop the dual listing. And he said that it would unleash the company's agility to do deals quickly. I mean, if they also end up buying Anglo, what does that mean for the FTSE?
The FTSE is going to, if BHP Billiton takes over Anglo, they lose the FTSE 100 is going to lose a top 30 company, because I don't see the company primary listing moving back to London. That will remain in Australia. So it adds more to the trend. And its natural resources have been always one of the strongest, if perhaps not even the strongest selling point of the London Stock Exchange. That was a lot of the London equity market was built around financing these ventures. For example, the Oppenheimer family ventures in Southern Africa. It is quite sad to see so many companies in the natural resources world thinking about leaving not just London, but also Paris. We are seeing natural resources companies really thinking that they don't have a place to be in Europe.
Here's a question for you, Javier. Obviously, I think mining remains very important to London. And even without Anglo, we still have Rio Tinto and Glencore, two top 10 companies in London and two of the mining majors in the world. If Glencore, which listed in 2011, one of the biggest listings that London has ever seen, would it do it today, 13 years later, or would it look elsewhere if it was looking to list the company again?
That's a good question. I think that probably they will look elsewhere. I don't think that for Glencore it pan out very well. That at that point in time in 2011, I think that it was just not a discussion. London was the obvious place if you were raising money for a natural resources company, whether that was on oil or in metals or even in agri, that London was the natural place to raise the money. Today, I don't think that if you were to list a company from scratch that you would like to do it in London. No, I just don't think that the money is there.
You had two great exclusives, Javier. First was with the Shell chief executive, who I don't know if he's done a U-turn on green pledges, but certainly he said, look, he's going ahead first with what they do best, which is oil and gas. And he's also said that they're possibly looking at not being listed in London. And then you had this great exclusive last week, also in Paris, where the chief executive of Total Energy, Patrick Pouyanné, also says that, look, there's a case to move the company's listing as he's navigating the energy transition. Is there a problem with Europe?
I think that from the point of view of the companies, obviously there is. They are finding that investors at best are keeping their stakes. At worst, they are selling. All the additional, all the extra money is coming from the United States. And then they are thinking, should we relocate there? Also, more importantly, it's not just about moving and saying we're going to have access to this pool of American money. It's that they think that they are adjusting, or they adjusted their strategy to please the European investors, and that failed because European investors keep selling. And I think that Wael indicated, I'm just paraphrasing him, but it's never going to be enough for a European investor, because you are going to be always being an oil company. No matter how much solar and wind you do, you're going to be still an oil company, and European investors do not want to own any oil. They want to consume the oil, but they don't want to own the companies that produce the oil. And therefore, the companies think that they will get a better valuation in the United States. And also their strategy, their hands will be free to implement a strategy that they probably, we have seen the movements of Shell starting to backtrack into some of the commitments that they made, particularly in declining oil production. And I do think that if it was today and we were go back to, say, 2016, 2017, I don't think that Shell will announce a reduction in overall oil and gas production. I think that they will say, we are going to meet demand.
Will and I were having a laugh on TV about the political pressure that the Total Energy chief executive could get from Macron. How many calls do you think he's fielding?
Yeah, well, I imagine there were a few French bureaucrats who spat out their morning coffee when they met Javier.
What?
That's a fair point. I think that you have asked me what surprised me if Royal Dutch Shell saying we're looking at this, or Patrick Pouyanné of Total Energy saying the same thing. It was Patrick, certainly, because it was not. As I said to some people, both in Paris and in the London market, it was not an off-the-cuff comment from him. And we spent about almost half hour talking about it. And he certainly, when we were speaking, he certainly have gone through the pros and cons. Look, let's not get this wrong. It is a very difficult movement to relocate from Paris or to London into the US. Particularly, you want to remain domiciled and have your tax incorporation, etc. You want to keep that in Paris, as Patrick Pouyanet said. You are saying goodbye to index money because you cannot get probably on the S&P 500. You get new accountancy rules. You're going to have a lot of more scrutiny. I mean, it is not easy. You know, you are going to be fighting then head to head with Exxon and Chevron. At the moment, it's very easy to say, Exxon and Chevron are valued higher because we are in Europe, they are in America. The moment that you move to America, that excuse goes away. Then it's going to be all on dividend and on strategy. And I do think that the European CEOs are right, that their companies will be worth a lot more if they were in the United States. But I will say also not with the current strategy in some cases.
I hear that from a lot of chief executives. Even the bankers will say, my valuation is suppressed because I'm valued in one of the European stock exchanges. I mean, is there any truth? Again, does the Total Energy compare with a Chevron or an Exxon?
I think what's really interesting about this story and reading Javier's interview is the mismatch between European policy right now and where the business is. And it was very stark in Patrick's comments in that if you look at the European policy to drive down carbon emissions, and they've had a fair degree of success in that, they're not going to meet their targets, but they've been more successful in other parts of the world. And then you see Patrick, leader of one of the largest companies in Europe, one of the most important companies in France, saying oil and gas production needs to grow for the foreseeable future. There's a real mismatch there, and something's got to come out in the wash here, which is either some walking back of the policy or some recognition that it might work for Europe but not for other parts of the world. All these companies are not going to be able to thrive in Europe because the policy environment is just not going to be there for them. And maybe Europe's okay with that. But the fact that we're all laughing about the CEO of the largest French company going to New York, it is surprising and funny given what we know about France. But it tells you something really serious about where the oil and gas industry is in Europe.
But how do you match the two? Because if you're going through the green energy transition, then you need to have policy at the forefront for green. And so there's a mismatch.
Yeah, but we do. The oil demand remains there. The fact is that global demand for coal in 2024 will hit an all-time high. We have not started yet to reduce coal demand, let alone oil demand. One of the main problems that I see for policy is that we set all these fantastic targets that, you know, by 2030, we're going to do this, and by 2050, we're going to do this. But 2030, in business terms, is coming tomorrow. And you look at global oil demand, and we are not just there. We continue to climb. Perhaps global oil demand will peak somewhere around the early 2030s, when exactly it matters less of what happens after that. But if you look at, is global oil demand going to be down significantly by 2030? No. Is it going to be global oil demand down significantly by 2040? Looking at any forecast, it doesn't look like that. And then you need oil, but you don't have the policy setting in Europe at all with that. And neither we are taking some of the, we want to get a significant reduction in oil consumption. We know how that is possible to achieve. It just means prices. You need to put a carbon tax that significantly reduces global oil demand. We are not discussing that. Not even in Europe are discussing that.
Thank you both for joining us, Will and Javier. Thanks for listening to this week's In the City from Bloomberg. This episode was hosted by me, Francine Lacqua. It was produced by Summer Sadi, additional editing by Blake Maples, show open design by Moses Annam. Brendan Francis Newman is our executive producer, Sage Bauman is head of podcasts, and special thanks to Will Kennedy and Javier Blas. Please subscribe, rate, review wherever you listen to podcasts.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.